Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome back. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Coach Kelly.
So happy to be here again.
Yay!
This is just sort of a regular part of our lives now.
I know. Right? It feels so normal.
First started, it was like week one, week two, week three.
That's and now it's like
months.
Yes, I was thinking the same thing.
It's awesome.
And the people before us, they want to come on our show too. So I guess we're making a presence.
Absolutely. And we love that you are listening. And we keep finding out that we have more and more listeners every week. So that's very exciting for us. And we do love hearing from you. We love your emails. We love your phone calls. So please give us a call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. We try to make it different every week. But, you know, mostly Kelly and I both specialize in relationships and people, and we work in the field, and we love getting your questions and your comments, and ask us about anything. If we don't know, we'll steer you in the right direction for somebody who does.
Exactly. Very true.
So last week was really fun. We talked about parenting, and we just got to keep going with that.
Unless I felt like we just, like, there was so much to say, and there is. That's why we had to make it a three-part series. I mean, this is really, there's a lot out there.
May even turn into a seven or eight-part
series. Exactly.
Because we would need to talk about step-parenting and parenting with children who are from divorce or, you know, adult children of divorce.
Sure.
All of that. So lots and lots and lots to talk about. Did you have any more thoughts about last week? We mostly spent time on young kids and any follow-ups to those.
I mean, I think I'm wondering if we should also do a parenting with kids with special needs. I think that might address a large population as well. And I feel like even we could have gotten to do a whole segment about just really like what it's like right after giving birth and just sort of like adjusting to that whole thing. I mean, that could be its own show, in my opinion, because I think it's really intense for a lot of people that you know, the whole change, the dynamic of your relationship with your partner changes and, you know, all that.
I know we mostly talk about that in the context, or most people talk about that in the context of postpartum depression. But one doesn't have to have postpartum depression as a full diagnosis to have an enormous amount of adjustments that one needs to go through after giving birth to a child. In so many ways, it even changes family of origin dynamics, because now all of a sudden one's parents become grandparents.
Yeah. Oh, God. This is going to make you laugh so hard. I was filling out my older son's doctor form, and it said mother, and I put my mom's name. Like, I couldn't. It was so weird to me to, like, that I was the mother.
You're the mother.
Yeah, I put down my mom's name. And then I was like, oh, wait, hold on. No.
Mother.
Like, yeah, it's me now. Like, it's so weird, but I totally agree with you. And then your nuclear family is then your husband, you, and your baby, or spouse, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then, but now, like your parents are sort of the extended family. It's very strange. It's a lot to, you know, wrap your head around, I think.
You know, my mom passed away when my daughter was only two. Oh. So it was very sad because I never grew up with grandparents because both of my parents' parents were killed in wars, et cetera. My mother's died young from other things. So I never had the experience of grandparents. And I was so looking forward to my daughter having grandparents. So she had my dad, and then she had my dad then later remarried and had my stepmom.
Yeah.
But it was sad for me for a long time that my own mom was never going to really see that. She had a couple years with my eldest niece, my sister's daughter, and she never actually met my youngest niece, my sister's younger daughter. So that's very sad. Maybe somewhere out there she's listening,
I was thinking,
watching. Or
so weird you said that, because I was literally just thinking that as you were saying that.
She's probably floating around as a butterfly somewhere.
Exactly, and can see what's going on. I believe that. That's a whole nother show, too. But I believe that. I really do.
Yeah. Did you suffer postpartum at all?
No, just that one day where I couldn't stop crying.
Oh, right. You mentioned
But that was it. No, thank God. But I actually had a friend. I don't know if I told this on air, but she had postpartum psychosis.
Wow.
And she killed herself.
Oh, no.
So intense. I mean, it was so intense. You would have never thought. I mean, she was a happy person, you know, was okay. And then, you know, I mean, that's how serious it is. Mm. That it really, you know, can just change everything in the brain. Wow. And she tried to get treatment and I think was in and out of facilities for a little while, but then ended up committing suicide. Very sad.
Oh, that is so tragic. Isn't because, it? You know, it goes away. Like if you get treatment and you yes. get help, you know, there is a light yes. at the end of the tunnel. And it's so hard to convey that to people when they're in
of course,
the depth
they're in this,
of that
yes.
darkness. They just can't see.
Right.
I always said about suicide is that it's when someone's in that place, you know, you don't want to just tell somebody that they're crazy for thinking that.
Yes.
That, right? Because that's really
sure.
where they're at. So
yeah.
I always said, you know, suicide is an interesting question, but a terrible answer.
Oh, that's, I like that a lot.
It gives people that, okay, not judging. I get it.
Exactly.
I get that you would question that and ask that, but
yes.
you know what? Once you choose that answer, you don't
there's no going back.
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting too. I was reading in some psychology books of mine. It's like you want to say to somebody, you know, hey, you know, I understand you're suicidal. But you basically want to shift it. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily you want to kill yourself, but it's you don't want to live the same way.
Yes.
And so it's like a different perspective. It's like,
I want to
you know,
end this pain.
Yes,
I
exactly. You want to end this pain. You don't mm-hmm. want to necessarily kill yourself because it's like it's hard. I can understand how people could group them together. It's like, well, I just want to end this pain. And the only way I know how is to die. But that's not true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really
well,
interesting stuff.
I'm sorry for your friend, and
oh,
I'm sure many
you.
People have experienced that, and sorry for anybody
yeah.
else who's suffered that loss. But on a lighter note,
yeah.
how do we deal with these little brats?
Exactly.
Our little lovable stinkers.
Adolescence is our topic today.
Yeah, and even pre-adolescence, right? I mean, there's a huge period of time where they move from that toddler, where I actually found that childhood section from, let's say, 5 to 10
uh-huh.
with my daughter was amazing.
Yes.
It was like I felt like I was the coolest person on
yeah,
the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
She adored me. She wanted to hang out with me. She was
yeah.
so sweet. She was so uh-huh. just endearing in every way. I mean, she was an adorable baby and toddler. But, you know, as they
sure.
all go through their temper tantrums and their demandingness yeah. and all of that stuff. I mean, she was a great kid. And then somewhere around, I think it was, interesting. She was that kid who was very shy.
Yeah.
So did a hard time with new people, you know,
sure.
but she was very independent. She could play by herself. She
mm-hmm.
was a really cool kid that way. And she liked play dates and things like that. But she wasn't the kid where it's like, oh, it's Halloween. I have to be the biggest
right.
and the best costume, whatever. It's like, she'd go to school and go, I don't care if I have a costume.
Yeah.
I don't want a costume. You know,
sure.
she was all into animals and she wasn't gender specific that way. She wasn't into dolls and she
oh,
wasn't
really?
Into boy things. She just loved animals and uh-huh. nature and drawing and art. And no wonder she's an artist.
Yeah.
So she sort of went to her own tune. But right around, I think it was in fifth grade,
uh-huh.
and she used to always have me walk and hold her hand to the classroom. And then just one day, she just said, don't hold my hand.
No way.
I'm like, okay, do you still want me to walk you up? Yes. Still walking up. Then like a couple weeks later, it was like, no more walking up. It's like, that's it? It's over? Like, that moment in time was over.
Oh, my. I'm, like, crying. I am so, like, because my older son said to me, like, for the first time 2 months ago, like, don't kiss me anymore.
Oh.
I was like, you're 5 and a half. I thought I'd have this for, like, another couple years.
Oh, my.
So it kills me because I'm, like, you know, it's so hard for me not to. But you're good with that. You're like, all right, I'm good. Like, I'm like, no.
Well, it took a little while. I mean, obviously, as you know, too, we know that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very normal when
sure.
kids start to recognize that it's time to grow a little bit more independent.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have that peer pressure.
Yes.
They now are much more focused. Like, the brain shifts, and all of a sudden, all they care about
yeah.
is family. And then it's like, no, it's all about friends.
Yep.
And it's such a quick transition.
Yes.
And they just can be so tormented internally because you know that they still care
yes.
about you and love you and they want and they're uh-huh. looking at you. They're still watching you. They're still watching
yeah.
what you say and what you
yes.
do, but they're snubbing it all along
yes.
the way. It's like, no, I don't care what you think, but they do.
Yes.
And that's where a lot of parents, I think, they get into the trap of thinking that they don't matter anymore
yeah.
in that pre-adolescence or adolescent.
Yes.
And yet that's probably one of the most critical time periods
right.
of the influence that you have because the external influences are so strong
oh.
now because they have so much more access to
yeah.
the community and friends and they're out in the world and they're, you know, they're doing so much more of their own thing that they more than ever need that.
Sure.
That continual connection.
Yeah.
And so we always made that happen at dinner time. It was like one of my
That's
really
so
important
nice.
Things is that we would always have
dinner
a sit
together.
Down dinner
yep.
together.
I think that is so important. They've done studies that show that families who sit down and eat together, the kids are less likely to be into drugs and, you know, rebel and all those kind of things. So I'm a big proponent of that. My husband never did that. I mean, he did not. Thank God. I guess he's one of the studies that, you know, the aberration, because he was fine. But I just... And he was okay with it because he would sit in front of the TV and watch dinner. But for
watch
me, that
dinner?
Was... Sorry, watch,
I like that.
Watch TV and eat dinner.
That was a perfect slip. He'd sit in front of the television and watch dinner.
It's very
well,
funny.
With all the commercials and stuff.
Exactly.
Could be like you're eating, right?
But I sat with my family and I loved it. It was very special. And my mom was a horrible cook. So it wasn't about the food. It was just about that feeling of security, I think.
Now, does she recognize that she was a horrible cook?
Yeah.
Or if she's listening to us right now, did you just hurt her feelings?
No. I mean, I think she would know. I mean, she's gotten better and she's pretty decent. But I don't know. We'd have like cold cuts. We'd have like macaroni with like on the side, like mandarin oranges. She'd like throw together like the most random things. I don't even know how I'm like standing up today. One night was like cereal night. Like, she just really didn't know how to cook, and I don't now either, which is so upsetting. I had to have my babysitter the other day like kind of show me how to cook, because I really don't know. And if you never learned and watched somebody else model it for you, it's hard.
You should just take a quick cooking
school,
you know.
Exactly.
I mean, and most of the ways to cook these days are so simple, because that's really what we decided is much healthier for our bodies.
Yes.
Not to do all that gourmet lavish stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom was actually the opposite. One of my mother's favorite things to do was pretty much was her hobby was learning how to become the best chef. And that was so important to her to have something, because she really did have a lot of that who am I not being anything but a mom kind of syndrome.
Yeah.
And so it made her depressed a lot. So she really got into cooking when my dad kind of turned a corner financially, him being an immigrant. He sort of struggled a lot in the first, I don't know, 8 or 10 years of my life. We lived much lower class. And then, you know, things started to go better for him. Mm-hmm. So the budget, the food budget
was
expanded. Yes. And so my mother would buy all these cooking books, and she would sometimes, like, she was also a little bit of an insomniac, and she would be at about 2 o'clock in the morning. If somebody woke up, here, would you like crepe Suzette's?
Are
you like
serious?
Yes. My friends loved to come over for sleepovers.
Of course.
When she wasn't having a bad temper, they enjoyed coming over because it was what's her mom going to cook tonight? Yeah.
That's
she was
incredible.
A great cook. But she was an interesting woman, because she didn't want me helping. So my only helping I could do was washing the dishes or cleaning the counters, but I really wanted to watch. But I did do a lot of just sitting in the kitchen and just observing her and watching how free she felt and doing these things, and recipes or no recipes. So I can see what you're saying. I was so grateful that I had that, because I felt much more confident.
Sure, because you could
kitchen.
See what's going on. Yeah. But you're probably very good.
I'm pretty good. But, you know, like I said, I was telling you earlier that my stomach is a little bit sensitive to a lot. I don't do sauces and all that. Most of my food is grilled. It's plain. It's simple. Lots of non-salt spices, just flavors and things like that, but not really any of the really extravagant. Although I do love making spaghetti sauce.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
From scratch?
Yes, yes.
This is amazing. To me, this like stresses me out. Like, I would so much rather just buy the can and be done with it. I mean, how pathetic. But
As they say, different strokes for different folks.
Exactly.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly. I'm sorry. I blew your thunder. You say your own name.
Coach Kelly.
There we go. And we are talking about parenting, and we would love to hear from you if you have any questions or stories. Yeah. Good, fun stories about parenting are also very, very welcome. Call us at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Or you can email us. Kelly, what kind of a teenager were you?
Oh, if you ask me, I would say good one. If you ask my mom, she would probably say something different. I think I was great up until probably about 16. And then I really got like, I mean, once I could drive, it was like, peace out, dude. Like, why do I need a curfew? Like, I'm good to go here. I mean, I wasn't so rebellious, but I was very boy crazy. So I felt like my parents, I just remember feeling like they're getting in the way. Like, I just want to do my thing. So I think it was a little bit rough at that point. But I would say, I still would say overall, it was pretty decent. I mean, I never was into the crazy drinking. I was always pretty responsible. I still got great grades. So in my opinion, I would want a child like me as a teenager. So it's pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you're going to say something different. How
about
you?
Me?
Yeah.
I was rotten.
Yeah.
I was dual personality, so to speak. I mean, I was still that kid who cared about what people thought about me.
Yeah.
I really wanted to do well in school, and I did. I mean, that was always very important to me. But I think I was so unparented in so many ways that I needed more structure. I needed somebody to actually come in and say, no, you can't do that, of the things I really shouldn't have been doing, and encourage me to do more things that I probably had some talents in, like some sports and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really given that roadmap. So I would like get in trouble when they would find out about stuff, but they didn't really give me the guidance.
Yeah.
But if my parents knew half of the things that I did when I was a teenager, they probably would have abandoned me.
I'm
sure. Most of the time, they didn't end up finding out. I was
good.
Kind of clever that way,
I guess.
So I knew how to stay under the radar, but my daughter was such a saint. She was, I mean, the areas in which she acted out were so mild. I mean, one time I think she ditched school with a friend. She was so terrified.
Aww.
And when they called me and they said, you know, it's your daughter, that she had my permission. And then I talked to her about it. But she was so afraid to do that. She was just so good. Now, if she's listening, because she does listen to the show, she's 22, she loves it, she would be saying, oh, Mom, you don't know half
the stuff
that I did.
Well, she obviously inherited that from you. She did well. She was clever.
She was clever.
No, but I remember you telling me how great she was, because I met you when she was in high school.
That's true.
And you always said she was such a great kid, and you felt so blessed, and you know, so.
Yeah, ours was now we're talking about that, you know, when she didn't want me around anymore, et cetera, it's interesting because we had such a hot, cold relationship during that time in adolescence. I mean, I could see the beauty and the value and everything about her, but she was really tough on me, and hence I think at times I was tough on her because my feelings were hurt a lot. It's like, hey, wait, I'm the mom that all your friends want to come to and talk about their problems and all that. You're telling me to shut up when I'm driving you to school because your friend is asking me about some advice, you know. But so she did more of the acting out with me and the arguing,
that
developing
makes sense.
Her independence and separation with me dominantly, but she was so wonderful out in the world.
That's,
and now she's just so wonderful to everybody. So I'm gonna send her a big kiss. I love you, Tiffany.
I got to meet her.
She's a really cool kid. Yeah, so what is there anything about your, it's always an interesting question, about your past that you would wish, you regret so much
wish
that you could erase?
Yes, there is one thing. So I had a good friend of mine, and she was dating this guy. He was like this player and whatever, and he just sort of like hit on anything that moved. And you know, I had low self-esteem then. I really did. And it's because I think back, I'm like, why did I like put up with so much crap? Is because I didn't realize I deserved better. And so they were on a break. And we ended up...
A dating break.
Yes, a dating break. And we ended up hooking up, this guy and I, you know, just kissing or whatever. But she found out, and it was just like, I just felt like that wasn't me. Like that, I remember that feeling, like, because my friends were so shocked that it happened, and oh my God, like, Kelly, like, how could you do that to her? You know, and it was like, I don't know, like, I couldn't, there was no answer. I just felt so mortified, and I felt like, my God, like, the, but you know, that was a behavior of mine, but that's not me and the essence of me. And so it was really hard. And I still look back, I'm like, oh, I just feel so badly that I hurt her so bad like that. And,
but
you
how
know.
Amazing that you had such a strong conscience at that time, that you were aware of that. So you know, you seem to have integrated that into an awareness of how important it is. And you were one of the gentlest, kindest, most loving people toward others, that it's just so beautiful. So maybe it's better that
exactly
wasn't erased, because it gives you that comparison of where it could go, but where it didn't go.
Exactly. It's so true.
Did she ever forgive you?
Yeah, but we had kind of a rocky relationship for a long time. But I don't think that was the cause of it. I think, you know, our personalities just clashed a little bit. But it took a long time, a really long time. I mean, he had cheated on her with a lot of people, and I was one of them. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if, like, I got a lot of the rage also, just because, you know. But yeah, it was hard. And, like, we were close with her parents, and I was always so embarrassed that, like, oh, my God, do her parents know? And are they looking at me differently? And I felt so exposed. That's totally the word. Like, oh my God, people have this impression of me. So that was hard. But you're right. It's like, it was such a great learning experience, I think, for me. And and just, you know, about friendship. So, you know, I don't regret it in that way, but it was hard.
Example, though, also of how much we need to understand what our teenagers are going through in terms of their sense of self-value. It's such an awkward time for so many people, and you have all this peer pressure to be certain things, and they force you to stretch outside your value system simply for that sense of unique identity of doing something outside the box. But sometimes it can be so dangerous and damaging, or hurtful to someone else or hurtful to yourself, and all under the... that pressure to have to fit in.
Exactly.
And so paying attention to who your children associate with is really, really important.
Yes.
I know that's a little bit of a segue away from
your story,
but it just reminds me of that. You know, it's funny. Your story reminds me of, I was probably two things that I really regret in my childhood, similar to yours, in that it was being mean to somebody else.
Yeah.
It was not being kind to somebody else. And it was really under the guise of teasing, and it wasn't really directed specifically at somebody. But it was a time where I was getting kind of the applause from others, so I kept doing it, even though I knew that it was wrong. And it was basically just making fun of two people's names.
Yeah.
There was a guy named, I think it was either Armin or Arpod, and he was in my geometry class, algebra geometry class. I think it was in ninth grade. And I would sit in the back of the room, and I would go, Arpod, Arpod. And he would hear, and other people would laugh, but they didn't know that it was me. And I felt so bad about that.
Yes.
And there's another guy named, I don't even remember his first name, but it ended up getting that tagline of P.U. Pitts.
Oh my God! Oh,
because his last name was Pitts.
Yeah,
you know, it was terrible, and I would instigate that teasing, and I felt so bad about that.
Well, it's like while you're talking, I'm thinking, why do teens do this behavior? Because they want to feel validated by their peers. That's really what it is, and it is at the expense of others. But it's because it's like you feel so you want that like love and attention, and it's like, you know, it's almost like you don't realize sort of the consequences until later, or you know, you just don't care because it's that instant gratification. I think in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and a lot of confusion. I think teenagers go through a very, very strong...
Yeah. I love working with adolescents, by the way. So when I got out of graduate school, I worked with adolescents, and I remember so many people, therapists included, would be like, you want to work with adolescents? Like, everybody felt like it was... And I taught sex education to middle schoolers. Like, I just love that age group. And, you know, I understand why people run from it, but I really like it. I think that... I think you just have to sort of, you have to have a lot of empathy for, you know, what teens are going through. And I never talked down to teens. Like, I never understood how teachers like kind of would baby the kids. Like, I felt like they wanted to be treated as older. And I think that I really tried to do that to sort of show them that they're their own person and things like that. But I love that age group. I think it's a lot of fun.
I see you being really good with teenagers.
Yeah, I like it. It's really cool.
Yeah. Well, you'll get a chance because you got two boys that are going to get
there. Yes, exactly.
A bigger chance outside of your practice.
I don't know if they're going to come to me. Yeah, that's the problem.
You know, and I too love working with adolescents. That was basically how I started. I only worked with teenagers for the first 7 years just because I was so young myself.
Yes.
It is definitely different, though, working with them versus being the parent to one.
It's so, so different.
So I really think that they're, that I, again, I come back to community parenting. It is always so helpful to have a couple of families where your kids feel close to the other parents and not take that personally, and where you can be close
That's
to their kids.
True.
You almost parent swap for a while.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's like, you know what, you're having an issue with that? Go talk to Jane down the street. I know you really value her opinion. You know, go get her opinion.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, sometimes it's so much easier for,
exactly.
for kids to learn.
What if they give like crazy off the wall advice?
Then you have a chat with Jane.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you ever tell my daughter.
Exactly. So that would be my fear. It'd be like, okay, great. I'll go talk to her. She just told me to go do it, you know, or whatever the case. So,
you know, I also encounter, this is an interesting topic within this topic, so many people who talk differently about their boys versus girls, like that they somehow parent so much differently. Now, I know that the genders, we have come so much more full circle in understanding how different boys and girls actually are, men and women.
Yes.
We are a different breed in many ways, and it's okay to recognize those differences as long as the difference isn't seen as that's a better quality versus that quality. But we're definitely different. But how much differently do we parent our children? Like, at what place is that just become stereotypic? Because you know, boys will be boys is what I still hear a lot. Boys will be boys. Just let that be.
Yeah.
Well, really? But that thing that boy is doing
exactly
is not impacted.
Sure.
You know, or it's hurtful or it's harmful. It's whatever. And, oh, girls. Well, girls, they have so many feelings. They have to be
emotional.
And all that stuff. Well, really? But sometimes feelings get in the way of good judgment and good stuff. So we have to teach, I think, both genders the importance of thinking, judgment, feelings, expression, communication, all of those things. So I do still think there is an overlap that we shouldn't lose sight of as parents, that it's not really, well, I do this for my sons and this for my daughters. Yeah.
Do you feel like it changes as they get older? Like, is there more of a difference when they're toddlers, when they're younger? Because boys are a little bit slower to mature, and sort of what they're playing with feels very separated at this age. Do you feel like it sort of comes together as they get older?
Or you know, I've always been more of the person specific kind of attention. You know, it's like, okay, gender was secondary to me. Then who is this little being in front of me? What is this person's temperament?
Yes.
What are they like? How do they shine? How do you foster those particular attributes in that person? I mean, one of the things that irks me still so much is when I hear parents talking about, well, I can't wait till my daughter gets married and I get to give her that wedding and et cetera, et cetera. It's like that's all that she's about.
Yes.
Or when she has gives me a grandchild.
Yes.
And, you know, all that can put so much pressure, because they work with these young women who think that, you know, if they're not in a relationship in their 20s, that something's wrong with them, you know, when they're actually pursuing a career or doing something different. So we do still have some of those
old
stereotypes.
Sure. Well, I think it's really interesting about gender in general, because I remember talking to somebody when we found out our second was a boy again. And, you know, I really did want a girl. I wanted a boy and a girl. I had a plan. Like, this was, you know. So I remember talking to this gentleman about it. And he said, you know, you can't really get too attached to gender. I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, I had two girls. I said, yeah. And he said, and one ended up doing the gender reassignment surgery and became a boy. And it was like, it was so eye-opening that it's like, you never really know, A. And B, it's like, you know, here's what I wanted was my ideal was a girl that I could do a spa day with and get her nails done. And, you know, it's like, well, what if she ended up being a tomboy? Then it would have been different, too. So it's like we had these expectations of the genders also that, you know, you have to look at the reality and, you know, they are who they are.
Absolutely. It's interesting because my sister, my daughter, one of her best friends in preschool and for the first couple years of primary school, ended up doing that.
Really?
Yeah. So it's so fun because she's still in our lives. So, you know, she works at a market. So I see her all the time when I talk to her. And, you know, she has a different name. Well, it's he now.
Oh, it's he now. Yeah, exactly.
Name. He's done a lot of the surgeries and he's so much happier.
Yes.
But that attachment to these decisions we make about our children when they're young, it's unfair to them
in
so many ways. So we should really be thoughtful about checking those expectations.
Of course.
And all the way through their lifespan, It's not just when they're younger.
Well, there's a great YouTube video out now about a family had a little girl and who was always a tomboy. And the beautiful thing is that the parents embraced it always and, you know, just wanted to wear boy clothes, wanted to cut her hair short, really wanted to be a boy. And they really embraced it. And at about the age of maybe 6 or 7, she said, I want to change my name. I want to be a boy. And I think a lot of parents would have been like, well, no, you know, your name is Samantha and you're a girl. You know, this is who you are. And they were like, okay. And now she's sort of like the spokesperson for like transgender. I mean, she's 7 and, or he's, I should say, and just feels so at ease and comfortable. And it's like, I can't imagine sort of having to go through that with non-supportive parents.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It'd be tragic.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well, we have some good emails.
Sure.
But I want to just give out that phone number just in case someone decides they'd like to call in. We would be happy to take your call. Call us at 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. And you are listening to Dr. Deborah and
Coach Kelly.
Coach Kelly. I like the way that sounds, Coach Kelly. Okay, let's do it.
All right.
Dear hosts, my husband and I have 2 kids. Our son is 11 and our daughter is 13. I'm having the most god-awful experience with my daughter, whereas my husband struggles with our son. I understand that mom-daughter pairs and dad-son pairs can have their unique challenges in adolescence. What's normal and when should I worry? At this point, it seems like our family is in a constant power struggle. I miss my little tots, but know I can't turn back the clock. Signed, help me stay sane.
Oh, oh. So hard.
But so typical. I mean, yes. Hey, mom, you're right on it. You're aware that there are differences. Yes, your daughter's purpose in life right now is to humiliate you, attack you, to make you feel rotten about yourself.
Sure.
Just so that she can feel different from who you are. She needs to separate. She needs to individuate. And your son is going to have a similar struggle with his dad, where he needs to grow into his own man. He has to become his own
thing. Yeah.
And what I would say is, as far as they stretch that rubber band, mm-hmm. and they will stretch it as far as it can, don't let it break, because you know what? Just stay tough. Hang in there. Try to toughen up a little bit so your feelings aren't constantly hurt, because they can get easily hurt constantly.
Yes.
And know that if you do that and you hang in there, they come around 99% of the time.
How long?
Years.
Yeah.
It's the biggest lesson in delay of gratification that you'll ever have.
God, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's not that bad for some, you know, for some it's horrible, for some it's a piece of cake, but you know, if they don't do it when they're supposed to, they're going to do it at some point. And I have so many people that they come to me and they say, "I had the greatest relationship with my daughters until they went to college." All right. Well, the fact that you didn't have it all the way to college, you might get it 10 times worse now, because they didn't get to do it when it was very appropriate and timely.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. That's a really interesting thought. Yeah. So it sounds like this is very typical. And it's more typical for the mother and daughter to butt heads and the father and son to butt heads typically?
Typically. Wow. Well, certainly when there are both genders in the family, I think, you know, because there's one of each. So
that makes sense.
They each get the playing field in their area.
Yeah.
You know, it's probably a little bit different sometimes for only children or for children. This is a two-child family.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, I don't think there's any one answer to this, but certainly what she's describing is quite typical, at least in my experience, both personally and professionally.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
What other things can we suggest to them? I mean, I think that, you know, in a constant power struggle, a power struggle is basically something where both people are trying to win.
Yeah.
And if you take it out of a competition and more into the level of empathy, compassion, understanding, getting curious about your daughter is going through, what she's saying, what she's talking about. Again, setting some boundaries, though, I think it's very, very important at that age for the mother with a daughter at that age to say, these are the things, however, that are off limits. I'll be there for you. I'll listen to you. I'll give you your space. I'll try to understand. I'll supply other people to whom you can speak about difficult things if I'm not the person for you. But you don't get to call me names. Yeah. You don't get to publicly humiliate me or assault me or hit me or things like that for both the father and son as well. Because sometimes without those, there's the moms who want to be friends with their daughters.
You know? I can see that.
And the dads who want to be buds with
their
sons.
Exactly.
But you are a parent all the way through.
It's true.
In fact, it never quite gets exactly even.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there still is a different role. Even when your children are adults, they still look towards you to some degree as a parent.
Yes. Of course. I could see that.
Yeah. Go get your friends where friends belong.
Exactly.
And, you know, recognize your role as a parent.
Sure.
It doesn't sound like this mom is having that issue.
No, I don't think so. But it's, it's a good point to make.
Easy to fall into that.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great advice. All right, so I'm going to read the next one we got.
All right.
Dear Dr. Deborah and Coach Kelly, my boyfriend and I are engaged. Congratulations.
Yes.
We plan on getting married next January. Raising a family is something we talk about. I'm from the East Coast, and he's a West Coast surfer. We really love each other, but even in things like how to act in public, what to wear, how to socialize, what's acceptable with friends and other areas of our lives, we often disagree. I'm a little more formal, and he's a little more chill. So when we talk about raising children, I'm saying we need to have rules and boundaries for our children, and he's a bit more go with the flow, like riding waves kind of approach. I'm concerned that this is going to create problems in our marriage. I know your subject is parenting, so my question is, if our approaches are different, is it okay if we as parents sometimes tell our children different things? It seems to me that both my mom and dad and his mom and dad had different approaches within each marriage, and I'm a great person and he's terrific. We both turned out wonderfully, or so we think, LOL. What can you tell us to soften some of the conflicts? And are there areas, examples, restrictions, punishments, rewards, presents, celebrations that we must be in agreement or we run the risk of making a mess of our kids? Bless you. So wanting the fairy tale life.
Well, first off, you will make a mess of your kids. We all do.
Exactly.
So just accept that.
They all
that.
Need therapy, and that keeps us in business. So, you know.
As I've said before, just start the therapy fund early
yes.
so that when you need it, it's
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Right? It's so true.
But, you know, these are great questions.
I have so much to say.
And great
yeah.
concerns. Go for it.
Okay. I have so much to say. So first of all, what I think the first thing is, you never quite know what you're going to say until you have the kid. So I think it's great that they're preparing. But honestly, the roles may reverse when you have kids. It's really interesting. My husband is much more of a rule follower. He's much more rigid. I'm typically more laid back. And I feel like with our kids, I'm the stricter one and he's more sort of permissive, I think, because he doesn't want to do the work at times, or he's just like, I don't want to deal with the consequences of a screaming kid. So that's the first thing I'll say, is that it's not necessarily how you're going to be with the kids.
Sure. Good point.
So that's the first thing I would say. You know, it's interesting. I think that couples are always going to have disagreements about raising children, even if you really are on the same page. Or I think you're going to have disagreements if you're different religions or, you know, different cultures. I think you're just two different people that are wired differently. So I think there's just going to be cases where you are going to be on the same page and other cases where you might not be. And I feel like here's where compromise goes a long way. I was really big about not vaccinating my kids. This was sort of my thing when I was pregnant. I was like, oh, I don't want to get vaccinations. I was terrified. I didn't, you know, I just had read things and I was worried. And my husband grew up with a Western doctor. I was like, absolutely not for getting vaccinated. And so what we did was we compromised and we just went with a delayed vaccination schedule, and it worked perfectly. And I felt comfortable with that. And he did. So instead of getting, you know, three vaccines at a visit or four vaccines, I'd get like one and then go the next 2 weeks and get another one. And so it just worked out. So I think there's just a lot of compromising. It's like marriage, and it's, you know, with kid decisions, a lot of times there are a lot of compromises too. So
absolutely. And in line with what you're saying, it's not so much differences that get in the way or become problems. It's how couples manage to regulate and monitor and deal with those differences.
Yeah.
You know, so if people have differences and then they go into their private corners and secretly just store resentments and nothing gets resolved, that's going to have a much bigger impact on the family system than if people have differences and they know how to communicate about them and share in their values and understanding. I would say that probably the areas that could promote the biggest difficulty is if there's value differences.
Yeah.
So like some of these examples, restrictions, punishments, it's, let's say one parent was raised with a pretty heavy hand. Let's say the parents used the belt, which now would actually be constituting child abuse. But let's say, you know, still permissive to slap a child on a clothed bottom.
Yeah.
You know, you're not allowed to use objects. You can't make marks, et cetera, et cetera. But some people still believe that, you know, a physical punishment in the moment to stop a two-year-old from running across the street is absolutely what's in order, right? To help them learn not to do that, et cetera, et cetera. Where somebody else may see, as is more in my way of seeing things, that physical punishment is physical violence.
Yeah.
And if you're promoting violence, you're likely to have. So I would not be able to tolerate parenting with somebody
who did that.
Even if they're operating within the letter of the law, it would still feel like such a huge value difference to me that I wouldn't be able to, I don't think I'd be able to handle that difference. Whereas, you know, if one person thinks, okay, let's try the chart where we give stars, and I think, well, that's kind of, in some ways, just teaching extrinsic motivation. Yeah. I'd rather teach internal motivation. Then you go, let's have a discussion about who our kid is.
Yes.
What's going to work for our child? So learning how to talk through things without being from the right point of view, but from what is the result you're after point of view, and how is that going to work out. So, no, I don't think that these being different in these ways promotes bad parenting.
No, I don't think so either. And I think also you might be surprised how much you might lean into each other and adjust and sort of, you know, like I think that you just learn from each other. And if one is a little bit more, you know, strict and kind of by the book and one's a little more chill, you kind of mesh together and you become a little more chill. You become a little bit more conscientious. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting to see where you end up too.
Where it does seem like it can get tricky, though, is in many couples, and I know you've seen this too, Kelly, is where the couple gets polarized. So whereas they may have only been a street apart in their differences, if they don't know how to navigate that, or come to a compromise, as you're suggesting, then that street starts to widen because they start to fear one another. And in that widening of that space, it becomes a Grand Canyon apart.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden, the other one is picking up one pole.
Yes.
And the other one is picking up the extreme opposite pole. Yeah. So one gets afraid that, well, if I become more gentle and more soft, then our kid's going to be so overly indulged because you're always going to be the whip.
Yes.
You're always going to be the softy. So somebody has to do it.
Right.
Or vice versa. Well, if you're giving in to our kid all the time, then I have to be
the heavy.
You know, and that can become very dangerous. I've seen family systems like that before, which they're just, it's brutal for the kids because they just, they feel like they're caught on a fence.
Yeah.
And, you know, they, then they start to learn to split.
Yeah.
They learn how to go, okay, well, I'm going to try to sneakily get this from mom and this from dad, depending on what they're after.
Yes.
And, you know, that promotes big, huge cracks in the family system. So that's something to watch out for.
Sure. I totally can see that. Yeah. Very interesting stuff.
Is there such a thing as a fairy tale life?
No. There's movies.
Have you ever watched the series called Once Upon a Time?
No, I never
saw that. I am addicted to it.
Really? Is it good?
Oh, my God. It's so crazy. Did you see the movie Into the Woods?
No.
That was actually a Broadway musical play. But they blend the different fairy tales.
Oh, cool.
So in Into the Woods, the movie, they have Cinderella and they have a couple of other ones that they they put into the
That's cool.
Red Riding Hood.
Sure.
I think it's, I don't even remember now, all the different ones they put in. But in Once Upon a Time, oh my gosh, they are pulling from everything. You've got Jiminy Cricket and you've got Rumpelstiltskin and you have Snow White and you have all these just...
That's cool.
It's just crazy. So, I mean, I'm a kid watching this. I just love it.
You know what I'm into? Totally unrelated, but Masters of Sex. Have you ever seen that the series?
No.
Amazing. I love three things about it. My husband totally picked up on the three things that I loved. I'm like, why do you think I like this? Okay, A, it's set in like the 1950s, 60s, which I feel like is the coolest, most interesting time period. Second, it just explores like how a woman is during that generation. And they focus on this one woman who is a mother who's divorced twice and is working. It's just sort of like, what's it like being a working mom during that time?
Mm-hmm.
And then the final thing is it's just about sex and sort of, you know, the norms and, you know, how taboo it was at that time. Really, really interesting. So sorry to get off topic, but it's fascinating.
Is that like an HBO series or something?
Yeah, I think it is either show, maybe it's Showtime. I'm trying to remember if it's Showtime or HBO, but I got it on Netflix, so.
Yeah, we're Netflix addicts for
sure. So good. So good. I love
that's
that.
That's a good question. So sex in adolescence.
Yes.
And that's a big question.
Is, yes.
Right? I mean, I think with all the communicable diseases, STDs, et cetera, we've become, I think, a much more conservative society about sex because even though kids are taught safe sex, teenagers are taught safe sex, etc., doesn't mean they're going to practice it at all, right? Because the judgment as a 16-year-old is just not the same as that of somebody whose brain is actually fully developed.
Yep.
But they think they know everything.
Of course.
And they often think that they will be the ones who won't get pregnant, you know?
So
and
sad.
We put so much of that onus on the female.
Yeah.
But, you know, men really, boys really need to take a hard look at their responsibility in creating those situations because it becomes a hardship for everybody. So what's your...
I'm a big proponent of handing out condoms. I am. I am. I mean, I just feel like kids are going to have sex. You might as well give them the protection they need, you know? Like, I just, it's like, for me, it's like driving a car. Like, they're going to do it. Just, you might as well wear the seatbelt. Like, just, do, I don't know how, what analogy, but like, I don't know. I just, I feel like abstinence, like, it just, I don't know. It's not realistic in our society. I really don't believe that. I think that, you know, you just arm them with, you know, protection and information, and they're going to be better informed. So I don't know, but I got in trouble for that. It was funny. So when I was teaching sex ed here, I had a question box for all my adolescents. And I said, ask me any questions and I will answer them. And I probably had, I don't know, 400 questions.
Wow.
And so I created like a whole booklet of all their questions and answered them in a very factual way.
Mm-hmm.
And handed them out to kids. And a lot of parents had a lot of problems because, you know, some of the questions were like, what is oral sex? And, you know, what is this? Or can I get a disease by this? And I just felt like, you know what, information and, you know, they're asking questions. So they're obviously curious. And I'd rather them hear it from me than get misinformation from a friend. So I'm just a big proponent of that.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I think there's value in helping teach our kids the value of relationship and having something meaningful in your life, even though, you know, you might be curious about sex. There's many things that we're curious about, but we hold off until we're more emotionally and cognitively mature.
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that that's a challenge. I think, though, I mean, one of the worst things to do is if you find out that your teenager has been sexually active, to be punitive about it, because, you know, you really have to become curious and informative and helpful and guiding, you know, being a guiding light for
things. Rather than,
you know, so, I mean, I know that that's a hardship for many families in situations like that. They just become... And it breaks the family apart.
Yes.
You know? And like you say, people are youngins are going to be doing that anyway. Yeah. What kills me is finding out that 11-year-olds, 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds are having oral sex and experimenting in sexual play, which is that just is very frightening. It's getting, seems to be getting younger and younger. I think we have to be open-minded and talk to our kids about sex and not make it this taboo subject that they're not allowed to ask about.
Sure.
Because of course they're curious. I mean, we are sexual beings from the get-go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in infancy. You
see
infants trying to masturbate. They're seeking pleasure, et cetera.
Right.
So people, of course, what's all the fuss about?
Yeah.
Oh, I hear that there's orgasms. I hear that's a great pleasure experience, you know? So they get curious and they become much more interested in in experimenting, you know? And if it's a boy-girl situation, boys are usually very interested in experimenting.
Yes, exactly.
Usually don't know when to stop.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I know, and that's a whole other topic.
I think also teaching both our young boys and young girls the importance of having boundaries and the importance of respecting their bodies and what does it mean when you give yourself in that way. And, you know, just being very conscientious about that.
Sure. What was I just reading? An article that now both partners have to say yes to sex verbally on college campuses if they have been drinking or something, or else it's constituted as rape. It's really interesting. I don't know. So something I was reading about it. Probably should find out the exact article, but it was kind of an interesting thought about both people need to verbally say yes.
But don't you think many times people, I mean, there's so many situations of a date rape, so to speak, or that if somebody does consent because they still feel like they don't have a way
voice,
out. They don't believe that they can say no, that there's some ulterior something that will happen
if they don't.
In fact, I actually was working with a young woman where she literally ended up in a situation. She thought she was going over to a friend's house, a male friend's house.
Okay.
She was in a relationship. He said, come on over, we'll watch a movie. He knew she had a boyfriend, yada, yada, yada. Uh-huh. She did drink some, and not that much, but, you know, enough where, you know, she said no as he approached her, and she said no again. And then he was so forceful that she was afraid she was going to get hurt that she then said yes. So he actually had sex with her, and the whole time she was like a frozen animal, you know, basically. And then afterwards, when she woke up, and it was like the next day, she goes, that was rape. I didn't say so. That is a whole other
the
show.
Story. Yes. Yeah, we could do that. We could do one on
but
David.
We don't have time for that.
Oh,
my goodness. Well, this is such a great topic, and, you know, we do love your emails. So for next week, please send us some emails. You're always welcome to call us with your questions and your comments, and we're here for you. Kelly, tell us more about you.
Sure.
What have you got going on?
So you can find me on www.kellymiller.com, and my book is Professor Kelly's Guide to Finding a Husband. It's on Amazon. That's me. Tell us about you.
Yeah. Go visit my website at drdebraonline.com, drdebraonline.com, and you'll find goodies there. I've got several books, and I'm blogging, which is fun.
That's great.
Yeah. It's great. It's really, it keeps my mind active and keeps me more in tune with what's going on, you know.
Sure. Today. I love writing. I love it.
Writing is great. So thank you so much for joining us yet again. I'm Dr. Debra.
And I'm Coach Kelly. And next week, we're going to finish our, well, we may not finish
we may
it.
Not.
We'll see. We're going to do our third part series on parenting. So join
with
us
with adult
then.
Children. But also, you know, we want to hear your stories and questions about divorce, step parenting, et cetera, et cetera. More to come next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Bye bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Debra and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.